keeping you current on all things criminal. This is Crime Feed. Crime Feed. With Darren Kevinoki and Lonnie Coombs.
Welcome to Investigation Discovery's Crime Feed podcast. I'm Darren Kevinoki.
And I'm Lonnie Coombs.
And we are covering the ripped from the headlines cases that everyone is talking about.
And don't forget that this is a weekly podcast, so please be sure to come back and listen to us every week.
And by the way, if you're truly an ID addict, don't you want to tell your friends about it?
Of course.
Get on social media. And if you're going to be on Twitter, be sure to use at ID Crime Feed and the hashtags Crime Feed Podcast. And of course, my favorite hashtag is Dumbest Criminals. But we'll more on that
we're
later.
To that one.
So, Lonnie, what's the latest?
All right, let's jump right in. Our first case today is Subway. Actually, Jared Fogle. But Subway has been in the headlines a lot lately. We know that back in April, there was an FBI raid on a guy's house named Russell Taylor, who was actually the former executive director for Jared Fogle's foundation. 400 child porn videos found. That kind of started the attention here. Now, there's been...
Wait, aren't you going to give me an opportunity to make some uncomfortable, awkward jokes?
Did you notice that I just kept going? Okay. In fact, I didn't even take a breath. I was trying to just get on to the next sentence.
You were saying, so this investigation was launched.
Yes, and then we had a raid on Jared Fogle's house in the beginning of July, and everybody was saying, wait, wait, don't make any judgments yet. This could just be in relationship to the first raid that was going on.
And there's no suggestion that Jared had these improper images or anything,
there's
right?
There's been no information about anything coming out of that raid. Exactly. Now, Subway did take some action. They did step back. They suspended him as their marketing guy. They took all, you know, pictures of him out of their stores, etc. Well, now something else is coming out. Apparently, there was a former franchisee, a female, who Jared was allegedly having a relationship with back in 2008, from January until June. This former female Subway franchisee has come forward through her attorney and said some statements about Jared. And she said that apparently after this relationship had been going on for a while, it became very uncomfortable for her. Allegedly, first, she said he started to pressure her to advertise herself on Craigslist for sex with other men. He asked if he could watch the sexual acts and told her, hey, you can make about $500 per act for this. Darren, do you see a problem with that?
Well,
legally, should I say legally?
Yeah. I mean, there's a whole host of problems with this. So the notion that he would be pressuring her to post herself on a website where she could get money in exchange for sex, it invites a conversation about prostitution crimes. So when we're talking prostitution, obviously you've got committing the sex act itself, which is the prostitution, but there's also pimping and pandering, which people sometimes run together like a ham and a cheese sandwich, like it's all one thing, but you got to separate out your ham and your cheese. Or in this case, you've got to separate your pimping from your pandering. Pimping is where somebody is actually like a broker for a prostitute, and they have some they also enjoy in the spoils of the business activity. So they may be promoting a prostitute and taking some piece of the action. Pandering is a little bit broader, and pandering can be promoting prostitution in and of itself. So it could be promoting somebody to engage in the act of prostitution, or it could be promoting to people that, hey, I know about this prostitute. So potentially that could be some criminal liability specifically for the crime of pandering.
Okay, and that's very interesting. Now, she continues on. Not only did he pressure her, she says, to advertise herself, he then goes on and she says, well, is this the same website that you found that 16-year-old girl that you effed? And I can't believe you paid only $100 for her, to which he supposedly responded, it was amazing. And I'm not sure if that was responding to the price or to the sex itself.
He's a bargain hunter.
Right. And then she said, what part of her ad made you think she was selling sex? And he said, you'll have to read them to see. Now, this is going on in Indiana, where Fogle resides. And there, the age of consent is 16 years old. if that conversation did take place, do you see a crime occurring there?
Well, yeah, I mean, if that conversation took place, because now you also have another foundational problem about whether you can authenticate these tweets and is this really Jared and does he have any defense there? But there would be at least a possibility about a prostitution charge, but we've got no independent proof other than his admission that he engaged in this act of prostitution. And
what if they got the 16-year-old? What if they found her?
Well, so in what we're hearing here is that in this particular state, the age of consent is 16. So this isn't a statutory rape situation. So that wouldn't appear to fit here. But as you know, Lonnie, the age of consent varies from state to state. Also, the age of the culprit is a factor. And statutory rape, of course, is a situation that is all based on the age of the people involved. It's not that anything forcible happened, but just that the law declares that people under a certain age are incapable of consenting. Mm-hmm. In this particular state, though, the age of consent is 16. So that doesn't appear to be a problem here. Uh-huh. I think the bigger problem is that we're learning that Jared's got some kink to him.
Well,
and this may be a whole other, this may invite some other problems for Subway. Yeah.
Now, here's the issue. Another question about Subway, because this woman also says that back in 2008, she actually went to Subway and she told them what was going on. She said she was uncomfortable. She told them about the communications. And according to her, Subway's response was that Jared is not an employee of Subway. He was just hired to do the marketing for the brand, which is ridiculous. In my mind. And then she said that she also met with two levels of management, shared the messages with them, said that she wanted to take away any marketing related to him in her own store because she was so disgusted by it. And once again, she said that she also specifically warned them that he should not be interacting with young people. But Subway still didn't do anything.
Well, that's potentially a problem for them, but it's really more in the nature of a potential problem, because if Subway's put on notice that they've got a dangerous employee, and I agree with you, I think it's hard to characterize him as just this marketing arm. Maybe. I mean, that's the kind of thing that lawyers fight extensively about. But Subway could have potential liability for failure to take reasonable steps to protect if there was some kind of something that happened in the future. I really see this as more of a public-facing court of public opinion issue than a legal issue, although it's certainly a potential one if there would have been something that had happened and they had been on notice and did nothing.
Well, and to give Subway a side, they're saying they never heard any of these allegations back in 2008. But it's interesting. I didn't realize how big of a person he is for Subway. He is worth supposedly $15 million. He's been their main spokesperson for Subway for 15 years, and I didn't know this either. Subway is the number three franchise in the United States, and their own marketing director says, really, that's in large part to Jared Fogel and how successful he has been as our spokesperson.
Well, so I think this last point may be the most important, because what you just talked about, Lonnie, are the kinds of details that actually turn cases around. So if I'm a lawyer suing Subway, I would use the facts that you just gave, that Subway is the number three franchise and that their own internal marketing says that 50% of that growth that they've enjoyed mm-hmm. is for him. I would use that to create an impression that he was too valuable to eliminate,
right.
too valuable to discipline, and that Subway valued dollars over integrity. In the meantime, seems like cutting the relationship with Jared, probably a smart thing to do.
Yeah.
But let's move on to an industry that doesn't have any kind of problems, has never had a PR snafu ever. Let's talk about the NFL.
They have such clean hands lately.
So we're not talking about Deflategate. Let's talk about Aaron Hernandez for a moment.
Oh, murder. Okay.
Obviously, Aaron convicted of murdering Odin Lloyd, convicted in April, sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. Defense lawyers for Hernandez are now seeking an evidentiary hearing for a potential claim of juror misconduct.
Well, those defense attorneys never give up, do they?
No, we are a tenacious lot. That's kind of what we're here to do. You know, defense lawyers really are engaged in government prosecution quality control to make sure that no one is wrongfully convicted. And so it's important that they're tenacious. So lawyers now looking for this evidentiary hearing, saying that there's this potential claim of juror misconduct. And this is all based on a, and I'm using air quotes now, an anonymous tipster who said that a juror was untruthful during jury selection. And now, though, there are facts that are surfacing that are suggesting that perhaps the anonymous tipster is less than credible.
Well, yeah, slightly. Apparently, the prosecution is determined.
Well, I'm sorry. Now she's no longer anonymous. Now she goes by Katie.
By Katie, right. Yes. Let's refer to her as Katie. The prosecution has said, hey, hold on just a minute. This tipster, who we're going to refer to as Katie, actually had a sexually explicit relationship with none other than Aaron Hernandez prior to and during the trial itself. Now, while both the defense and the prosecution has said, yes, there was extensive personal contact between Katie and the defendant, both sides have admitted to that. The question is what that actually means, because the jail is saying, wait a minute, we don't allow personal contact. So you must be talking about maybe sexually explicit letters, but whatever it is, whatever the actual contact
phone
was.
Calls.
There's also allegations by the prosecution that Katie's father is an inmate at the same institution where Aaron Hernandez is. So there's another connection there.
Or just another odd coincidence. You know, the universe operates in funny ways sometimes.
So the prosecution is saying, hey, look, there's no reason to go any further. This woman has no credibility. The defense is saying, let's go to court. Let us question her under oath.
Let's have a full airing of the facts. But I think the legal tidbit here really is that criminal lawyers who try a lot of cases know that sometimes a conviction is just the first step towards a successful appeal.
That's one of your favorite quotes.
But when we're talking about criminal appeals, one of the most fertile areas of attack for successful appeals are relating to the jury, either jury selection problems, jury instruction problems, or jury misconduct problems. Those are the things that more often than not, when there is a case that's overturned, those are the reasons why.
Yeah.
And so I'm wondering, what do you think, Lonnie? What's a judge going to do with this?
Well, like you said, if this is a potential ground for appeal, most judges say, look, in an abundance of caution, throw the girl on the stand, let everybody question her under oath, see what she has to say. There's no reason now to step
downside?
Back and stop. Yeah, I'm not sure why the prosecution is really objecting to it other than just putting it on the record and kind of putting their side out there. But listen, if she gets on the stand and she testifies under oath and they find that she's lying, then the prosecutor can actually go after her for perjury.
Yeah, that's so interesting you bring that up, because on social media, there's been a lot of activity about this story. And people wondering, well, could she be prosecuted for making this false claim? Because somehow, believe it or not, people are cynical and they see that the idea that there was whatever the sexual relationship was and the fact that her father and Aaron may have been connected, they're now looking at Katie with a jaundiced eye and suggesting that somehow she's just cooking this up to try and get Aaron out of hot water or get him into another trial. But if there was that evidentiary hearing, far more likely that prosecutors could then bring a perjury charge based upon what she actually says in open court, as opposed to whatever it is that she's reported informally, not under oath.
Right. And then they can go on to other grounds for appeal if that one doesn't work. So let's move on. The next case we're talking about is a young man from Indiana again. We're back in Indiana, named Zach Anderson. This is a 19-year-old young man who went on a dating app called Hot or Not. A new app I didn't know about. I learned something new all the time. And this is essentially an app where young people can find people to hook up with. So and he did.
I thought Hot or Not was kind of a voting thing where you would debate about whether somebody was hot or not.
Well, you would assume so. However, the way this one turned out is that Zach Anderson met with a young woman who told him she was 17. You can see where this is going.
Uh-oh.
But she was not. She's 14. They had sex, consensual sex, and everybody agreed to it. Well, he ended up getting taken into court, where the girl and her mother came in and said to the court, look, it was consensual. I lied. I told him I was 17. We're so sorry this all happened. But the judge was furious. He essentially threw the book at Zach Anderson and he said, I'm sending you to jail for 90 days. I'm putting you on probation and I'm putting you on the sex offender register. So essentially, it's interesting that in Indiana, even though apparently if the girl lies, she comes in and says she lied, is consensual, you can still get convicted of stat rape?
Well, yeah, it's interesting because, and this is one of the things that troubles me about statutory rape, that it's one that it's sort of an artificial crime in the sense that any decent human being knows that forcible rape or murder or certain crimes, you just know it's inherently wrong. But with statutory rape, it's this legal fiction that we create where we say, hey, look, we're just drawing this bright line rule that only people that are of a certain age can consent to whatever they want to do with their bodies. We're going to deem them to be incapable of consenting if they're below a certain age.
Well, but, and it's inconsistent between state, right? The ages change from state to state, too.
That's right. And the law varies from state to state. So obviously you want to check in and find out the law in your state before you take any actions that can get you into hot water. But the other thing is that besides the fact that it'll vary based on geography and that the age of consent is gonna vary. There are also differences about how you could defend yourself against such a possible claim, because it used to be historically that it didn't matter whether you had a good faith belief that somebody was of age or not. It was what we call a strict liability crime, which is basically, look, if her birth certificate says that she's below the age of consent, then that's it.
Right. No matter what she says, no matter what you believe.
Right. Yeah. Even if you have that honest, good faith belief about that. But in this particular case, it sounds like there were some facts that were important that actually could have put in this young man's mind, hey, no, she is of the age of where she can consent to the sexual activity.
Well, and at this point, the state of the law, about a third of the states have allowed for this mistake of fact defense, where it says if you have information, evidence, such as the victim telling you that they're of legal age, and then there's other indicators like her friends, et cetera, tell you that she's of legal age.
Well, and this girl came in and said, I lied about this.
Right, right. But this judge, it didn't matter. And not only was he sentenced, but the harshest part really is this sexual offender registry. And he has to do it in two different states because apparently she was from Michigan, he was from Indiana.
So now he's on two different registrations.
Yeah. And for those of you who don't really know the consequences of that, you know, when you can look it up on your website every once in a while, on your Facebook or something, it'll pop up. Hey, you want to see who the sexual offenders are in your neighborhood? And you can look at it. The impact that it has on someone like this 19-year-old is he can no longer go on the internet. He can't go to a mall or a park or a school. He can't even live with his brother because his brother is younger than him.
Wait, but there's no suggestion that he had any sexual interest in younger boys.
This is all based on the one incident where he had sex with this one 14-year-old girl he thought was 17. Sometimes it means you have to take polygraphs, you have to register your address so people can know where you are. And obviously, if your name pops up like this, it's going to affect your job status.
Yeah, good luck with that.
Yeah.
But, you know, here's, I think, the bigger problem that we all have. While having a sex offender registry may have been motivated with good intentions.
Right, for child pedophiles.
Right, exactly.
Very helpful.
But when you take somebody like this and you throw them into the same registry where you have actual pedophiles, it creates so much noise. Because I've checked my address to see how many sex offenders live in my neighborhood, and it's hard to find a neighborhood that you don't have a lot of sex offenders in. And it becomes, to me, it's kind of like the car alarm effect, where back when they first launched car alarms, that would really get your attention, right? If you heard a car alarm going off, you'd think, oh my goodness, there's crime happening here. Somebody's car's just broken into, has just been broken into. Summon the authorities. And now if a car alarm goes off, you think, oh my God, who's the idiot that still has a car alarm and you would never pay attention to it? Just shut that thing off.
Yeah.
Well, and I think with the number of people that get thrown into that sex offender registry, cases like this, it's almost like the registry loses its whole reason for being.
It's
it doesn't
diluted.
Put people on notice anymore.
They estimate about 25% of the people who are on the registry were committed acts before they were 18. So there are these young guys who are having sex with these underage girls, you know, maybe a one-time thing, maybe a girlfriend, whatever, consensual. And they're diluting that registry because you go on it and you're not sure, is this somebody I really need to worry about or not? And all of the state resources that go to maintain that registry and check up on the people, you know, they're going to these young guys, too, in addition to the pedophiles. So it's stretching those resources thin.
But here's the problem to get this fixed. It becomes a political issue because can you imagine being the legislator that wants to come out in favor of, loosening up the sex offender registry requirements.
Right.
No, it's, I mean, it's political suicide. No one wants to be the one to be a leader here and say, let's back off this thing, even if it's in the context of saying we just need to take a fresh look at how we're doing it, or perhaps create two different registries, one that is based on what we've been referring to as the pedophiles, those that really demonstrate a present risk of reoffending, and others that were engaged in more, I don't know, juvenile activities.
Well, look, there was a big study done back in 2013 by the Human Rights Initiative, and they talked, Human Rights Watch, and they talked about this, and they said, look, this is not doing what it's supposed to do. And another suggestion was have a risk assessment,
right,
where you can actually rank these people, how serious they are. But it's been 2 years and nothing's happened because, like you said, the lawmakers are afraid of what people are going to say about it.
When I was looking at the story, though, the thing that really stuck out to me is this judge is an old fuddy-duddy, because he took this opportunity to just lambaste our young 19-year-old protagonist defendant here. And he was saying that meeting girls on the internet is just part of our culture now. And he says, and I'm quoting, meet, have sex, hook up, sayonara. Totally inappropriate behavior. There's no excuse for this whatsoever.
Which,
and he sounds like the judicial equivalent of an old man yelling at kids on the lawn, you know, get off of my lawn!
That type of personal opinion put into the record really makes me nervous about, you know, where's the legitimacy here in this sentence? That's the kind of thing that other people could get a hold of and say, hey, is this what we want from our judges on the bench, judging kids because they had sex via a website on the internet? I mean, you know.
I think another example of how the law sometimes lags behind technology advances. I don't know. If I was a teenager again, I would be very grateful for Hot or Not or whatever all those apps are.
Blend,
whatever. It would have made life so much easier. We had to do it the old-fashioned way. Anyway, moving on before I make some damaging admissions. This is a horrific story. This is my personal outrage of the week, involving a 911 dispatcher. Who really, I don't know, there's a special place in hell for this kind of behavior. So here's the story. There was a 17-year-old young man who, by all accounts, is just a stellar human being. His name was Jaden Chavez Silver, and he's over at a friend's house. Unfortunately, there's a drive-by shooting outside having nothing to do with him, and Jaden is struck by a rogue bullet. And as he's lying there bleeding out, his friend calls 911 to save his life. And the 911 operator is asking, and I think more than once,
over and over again,
is he breathing? And the friend, who is now, I mean,
also 17 years old herself, trying to keep her friend alive,
desperate to save her friend's life, is saying yes. Apparently she's replying that he's barely breathing, and then at one point adds, how many times do I have to tell you? And maybe there's some swear words thrown in. She wasn't on her best behavior, but perhaps not the greatest moment in her life either. Anyway, so how does the 911 operator respond to this? The 911 operator says, well, you deal with it yourself then, and hangs up the phone. And then the young man dies. Now, I got to say, by definition, if you are calling 911, you're having a bad day. No one's dialing 911 in their best moment. And I think we as a society should insist that 911 operators rise above.
Well,
they're the ones who receive special training to know how to deal with these situations. They're the ones that are there to be the calming and instructive voice. How dare this person?
That's clearly what their training is for, is to be able to help people in a crisis who are going to be desperate, who are not going to know what they're doing, and they're supposed to stay calm and give them direction and send the emergency vehicles. Now, what's been lost in this discussion and the outrage that everyone feels when you listen to this tape and the poor young woman who's so desperate and begging and pleading and just literally begging with her friend, just one more breath, just one more breath, keep breathing until help comes, is that actually help was on the way. He hung up the phone But the emergency response units had already been dispatched to go to that location. We don't know what actually ended up causing the death of this young man.
Lead poisoning. How about a stray bullet, I think,
right.
caused the guy's death.
Right. But what a lot of people want to blame it on is the dispatcher who hung up the phone.
Yeah, Matthew Sanchez is his name, by the way.
The reality is he had already sent the emergency units. And a lot of people are saying, well, wait a minute. This dispatcher should be fired. He should be charged with a crime. He should be held liable for the death.
So what's the legal situation? So you say no crime.
Well, I'm saying as far as criminally, people want to say he's liable for the death. We can't prove causation. And whenever you're going to try and charge somebody with a death, you have to be able to prove a direct link between that person's behavior and the death that occurs.
Well, what about a crime other than obviously not responsible for the death that happened because of the person who fired the bullet?
Okay, but I want to make that clear because a lot of people are saying he should be charged with a criminal act. It doesn't appear that you can't charge him with any type of murder or manslaughter. Okay,
but what other kinds of criminal acts?
Well, obviously there are not criminal acts, but well, you might want to argue for another criminal act, but there's also civil charges.
I do. I'm pissed at this guy. I want to argue that Matthew Sanchez, derelict in his duties, should be charged with some criminal act.
Okay, what act? Because as the former prosecutor, Mr. Defense Attorney, I'm not seeing a criminal act. I'm seeing duties. I'm seeing perhaps civil charges. I'm seeing a violation of if he's a licensed or he's certified. I could see violations of those, losing his certification, losing his license, perhaps the employer having some type of liability.
Yeah. So look, I mean, certainly from an internal level, there's all sorts of discipline that could and should happen to him. Although I think initially he was suspended and then finally resigned his position.
Well, he resigned a day later.
Yeah, probably a wise move. But look, I guess this is one that we'll have to continue to monitor and keep our eyes on. Speaking of cases that we're keeping our eyes on, I don't know if murder's ever cute, but is it slightly cute if it's committed by a little old lady?
No.
I think there's a case I'm keeping my eye on. She's known as the Granny Ripper, a little old lady serial killer who's accused of beheading and dismembering at least 10 people. And the suspect here, a 68-year-old woman, Tamara Samsonova, who's, as I said, accused of murdering at least 10 people over the last 20 years. Attention was first focused on her when there was incriminating closed-circuit television footage that surfaced of her lugging around a plastic bag full of body parts.
That would alert me.
That would do it. She was a former hotel worker who allegedly did all these people in, and not just killing these folks, but then beheading and dismembering them and scattering their body parts all over town. And, of course, when police got interested in her and searched her home, they found things that were, I don't know, slightly incriminating, like a knife and a saw and blood spots in the bathroom. And perhaps even worse, her diary that accounted for all of these activities. So
how nice of her to lay it out for us.
Yes, she and I love the quote, a source quoting that's quoted, who's close to the investigation, who says that, quote, "She's either much more stupid or much smarter than she seems." I'm going with the former, not the latter. I don't know.
I don't know. She got away with it for 20 years.
Yeah,
I'm just saying she's killed 10 people in 20 years, supposedly.
If she was much smarter, though, would we be talking about her? Well, would we know about this, Lonnie?
At some point, you're right.
What are you keeping your eye on?
All right. Sandra Bland. A federal lawsuit has been filed by the mother of Sandra Bland, essentially for two things. One, she's saying that Bland should never have been arrested. And that, two, she was held in dangerous conditions without proper supervision. And essentially, the attorney for Sandra Bland's mother is saying, look, we just want answers. We want to know what's going on. The law enforcement agencies are not answering our questions. They're not giving us any information. So they filed this against the state trooper who pulled her over, two guards at the county jail where she died, the Texas Department of Public Safety, and the county. And essentially, they're saying that the trooper who pulled her over demonstrated a deliberate indifference to and conscious disregard for her constitutional rights and safety, that they used inappropriate force and caused her to suffer injury. Now, what's another interesting part that kind of brings up some new little tidbits? They're also saying that she had told her jailers that she had attempted attempted suicide mm-hmm. in the past. And despite that, the lawsuit says, these jail officials placed her in a cell with, quote, a variety of inappropriate items, including a large garbage can, garbage bags, and exposed beams. And then they said that the guards failed to check on her frequently, even though she had been crying and upset and she was refusing to eat. And they're saying, look, the mother's saying, look, if it ends up that she did commit suicide, I will accept that. But she never should have been in jail in the first place.
Well, what's nice about this civil lawsuit now, this federal lawsuit, is there's the opportunity to take discovery. Because in criminal mm-hmm. cases, you can't force witnesses to sit down and talk. You don't get depositions in criminal cases. But in civil lawsuits, you do. So people are going to have to sit down, give testimony under oath, and at least mom's going to get some peace of mind, I hope.
Maybe some answers.
And maybe some answers. Yeah.
All right. We're on to my favorite part of the show, and
it's a little competition.
You know, we're so competitive. We always have been. Dumbest criminals.
That's right. It's, you know, Lonnie and I like to tee it up and see who can find the dumbest criminal activity. By the way, don't be afraid to send in your ideas. Send them to me. Or at ID Crime Feed, and use the hashtag dumbest criminals, or just send them to me at Darren Cavanocchi. Anyway, hopefully we'll have some unanimous agreement about who wins. Lonnie, you got a look on your face that says you want to go first.
I think I always go first, but I'll go first again.
I'll be
thank you.
Yes, chivalry prevails.
Oh, Darren, you're so nice. All right, this one once again is from Florida, my favorite state for dumbest criminals.
From Florida.
Oh,
that
boy.
Would be crazy.
I know.
Wonder if we got the same one. It's not possible to have two crazy stories from Florida, is it?
Yeah, right. Okay. This is about a guy named Christopher Cron, who decided he wanted to burglarize a restaurant after it closed one night. So, number one, he tripped the alarm when he broke in. It wasn't a silent alarm. Number two, when he heard the alarm go off, he decided, well, I don't need to flee. I don't need to run. Number three, when ADT called the restaurant because the alarm went off, he answered the phone. Isn't that nice? Number four, he gave the ADT employee his real name. Well, how nice of him. He's just polite, right? Number five, when he finally decided maybe I should leave, all he took after all of this was a bottle of Grand Marnier and a beer. Number six, after having gotten away with it, he decides the next day to go back to the restaurant.
Oh my God.
Where he is recognized by an employee who saw the surveillance video, and he is arrested.
Wow. Isn't there an expression about always returning to the scene of the crime?
Yeah, I know.
I always thought, where did that come from? And apparently it comes from Florida.
Mr. Cron, yeah.
Yes, okay. Well, very good. I have to say, and an A-plus for organization. Like,
thank you.
That was
I wanted
phenomenal.
To make sure you noticed every single stupid thing he did.
You were the one in school with like the peachy folders and the different colors or the trapper.
I still am. Yes. You know that.
Yeah, I know.
My highlighter,
Yes, I was not that guy. Anyway, okay, so my guy, coincidentally, what are the odds, also from Florida, Donald Gartner from Port Richey, Florida, he had a little trouble one night. It started, apparently he got a little loaded on beer and OxyContin.
Oh, which, nice combination.
It is a nice combination. And so it all started, as these evenings do, with just a little fun. Witnesses describe seeing him in a particular neighborhood. His mode of dress did attract attention. His shorts were sagging low.
Oh.
Not a fashion crime, perhaps, not a crime. They were also on backwards.
Oh.
witnesses described that he had been urinating in the bushes and he was banging on a neighbor's door. He broke a glass panel of a porch light and then he starts ripping out electrical wiring on the wall. Just
wow.
Friday night in Florida, right?
I guess.
So, of course, the police come and this gentleman was arrested for criminal mischief and he was booked that night at the Lando Lakes Jail. I just love the name. I just see
it
that jail
so
being
nice.
Well, to me, it sounds slippery. I think about the butter, you know, like anyway, the Lando Lakes. So he gets thrown in the pokey at like 7:30 that night. At 10 o'clock, he's being processed out. And apparently he became impatient as he's waiting for a ride in the parking lot of the jail. And as a woman pulls up in the car. He tries to get in, basically steal the car from her in the jail.
In the prison parking lot?
In the parking lot outside the jail. And she got away, but then shortly afterward, not content, he tried breaking into another car, and deputies are watching him. So less than 2 hours after he's out, he gets arrested and charged with 2 counts of attempted auto burglary.
He never even made it out of the parking lot.
Didn't make it out of the parking lot.
Oh, man.
So I know my story not as well organized as yours. I think, I don't know, once again.
I don't know, that's pretty stupid. That's pretty bad. Very impatient.
Do we turn it over to an impartial?
Yeah, I think we have to.
I can't decide. They're both pretty dumb.
Oh, you can't get then we've got to turn it over to the tweetosphere and say, look, you've got to help us by tweeting at ID Crime Feed using the hashtag dumbest criminals and tell us which of the two great Florida cases you think is our dumbest criminal of the week and vote for me,
Darren or Lonnie,
or just Darren. I have to say, Lonnie, it is such a privilege being here with you. And to everybody out there listening, thank you so much for listening.
Yeah, and remember, if you want to watch more shocking true crime stories, watch Investigation Discovery or visit crimefeed.com.
And we will be here. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you next week. Tell your friends.
Keeping you current on all things criminal. Crime Feed. Crime Feed. With Darren Kevinoki and Lonnie Coombs.